Some talk about being old school. Others say they're new school. Some claim it was better back in the day. Others argue it's never been better than today. Welcome to In the Bullpen with Mark Dewey, sponsored by Developing Contenders Ministries. You're listening to the Fight Laugh Feast Network. Thank you for joining us.
And look who's coming up. High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
Last week, I mentioned a Ball 9 article written by Kevin Kernan, and I referenced a label he used. The label was the Kia Generation. Did you check out that article? If you did not, do you have any idea what in the world the Kia generation is? Well, I'll get to that in a few minutes, because I want to discuss some of the generational differences as it regards the game of baseball, as it regards the view of how things are going and how things ought to be done in the game of baseball. But first, I want to make some generational connections. I guess I'm not making the connections, I'm pointing them out. Last week, something happened that has never happened before in Major League Baseball. And it happened on Thursday when Jack Leiter made his Major League debut pitching for the Texas Rangers against the Detroit Tigers. Jack Leiter was the number 2 overall pick out of Vanderbilt in the 2021 Major League Draft. And he was a highly touted prospect. The very first major league hitter he faced was Riley Green, and he struck him out on 3 pitches. Now, he had a bit of a rough outing, ended up going 3.2 innings, giving up 8 hits and 7 runs. And then on Friday, he was optioned back to AAA. He'll be back in the major leagues, and almost certainly he will have a fine Major League Baseball career. But in his debut, it marked the first time in Major League Baseball history that 2 former Major League Baseball brothers had sons who also played Major League Baseball. So Jack Leiter's father is Al Leiter. Jack Leiter's uncle, Al's brother, is Mark Leiter Sr. His son, Mark Leiter Jr., has been in the big leagues for the most part since 2017. First started out with the Phillies, spent a little bit of time with the Blue Jays, and is now pitching with the Chicago Cubs. So it is Al and Mark Sr., who are the brothers who played in Major League Baseball, and now Jack and Mark Jr., the sons, and for the first time in history, that has happened. Now, I know Al a bit. I know him from playing against him. He was with the Marlins my last couple of years with the Giants. And then when I got a job coaching in the minor leagues with the Mets, Al was with the Mets at that time, and we had some conversations. But the main reason I know Al, either playing against him or even coaching with the Mets, is because of his brother, Mark Leiter Sr. Mark Sr. and I were teammates in 1995 and 1996 with the Giants. His son, Mark Jr., was a little 4- and 5-year-old boy running around the clubhouse during those years. So it's really great to see all this come together. And it's just, it's a wonderful thing. And congratulations to the Leiter family for having something happen with their family that has never happened in the history of Major League Baseball. Now, as we talk about connecting generations, I think that I'm probably accurate to say that it is very likely that Jack and Mark Jr. have a view and approach to the game of baseball very much in line with their fathers, Al and Mark Sr. Another young man whose father played in the big leagues, Bo Bichette, he made some comments on his views of hitting that were making the way around social media this past week, and what he said would make me believe, again, that he has taken keys and understands things from his father, Dante Bichette, a man that I played against. And it's great to see that as well. And there are many others who have played and are playing the game, who have covered or are covering the game, fans that are older, fans that are younger, that essentially have the same view on things. But generally speaking, what I'm seeing, what I'm sure you're seeing as well, is a great divide between generations in the view of what's going on in the game and the direction it's going. On the one hand, again, as a rule, not without exceptions, the older generation, guys like me, have some concerns. They think the game is going in a bad direction, that there needs to be some correction. Then on the other hand, generally, though not exclusively, the younger generation make the comment, this is the best we've ever seen. The game has never been better. Now, when you take old guys like me, like Kevin Kernan, and then there's a bunch of others that I follow or read or listen to podcasts of various degrees, guys like Greg Olson, Jeff Fry, Will Clark, a former teammate of mine, Clint Hurdle, a former manager of mine, Wes Clements, Matt Stark, Bill Pulsifer, Kyle Farnsworth, a guy I played against, Tim McDonald, Michael McHenry, Joe Madden and Tom Verducci, I've talked often about the Book of Joe podcast, John Parato, a longtime writer for the Pirates in Pittsburgh, Greg Brown, a longtime announcer for the Pirates. When I read these guys, when I listen to these guys, I hear them all raising concerns. Now, there are varying degrees of that concern, and they express their concern with various degrees of intensity. And for those that are more intense and have more concerns, oftentimes people will say they're just old men telling the youngsters to get off their lawn. Or, in my opinion, even worse, old men yelling at the clouds. These are the kind of guys that come up with a phrase or a term or a label, the Kia generation. Younger people, again, generally, in and observing the game, many of them with Ivy League degrees, say that the game has never been better. The players have never been better. They are bigger, stronger, and faster. They throw harder than ever. They have nasty breaking pitches, better than ever. Pitches that Barry Bonds and Tony Gwynn could never touch, let alone the normal Major League Baseball player of yesteryear. On and on it goes, back and forth. One side says, we have all of these stories, we have all of these videos to show how much better it was. And then the other side says, oh yeah? Well, we have all the numbers to prove you're wrong. So here's my question. Who do you believe? Here's another question. Why ought you believe that person or that group of people? How can the average person, the one who never played Major League Baseball, never graduated from an Ivy League school, know who or what to believe? Do you even have any right to speak to the matter? I'll ask you this right now. Is this just one of those old men shouting at the clouds?
Don't ever think that this game is about you.
And of course, if you've been listening to this podcast, you have heard that quote from Robin Yount before, and almost certainly you will hear it again. And because I play it again and again, it's very obvious what I think. But here's the question. Yes, Robin Yount is a Hall of Famer. But what weight should we put in to what he says, in particular that quote? Why should we care a lick about what he thinks? About what he's emphatically pleading for? Does the fact that he is a Hall of Fame Major League Baseball player mean he has to be right with his views? Does the fact that likely every person currently in the Hall of Fame who's still alive would agree with Robin Yount? Should that matter? What if we took a survey and 99% of all current Major League Baseball players, current people working in the front office, current coaches, reporters, fans, and the like, said that what Robin Yount believes is all bunk? What if they said, listen, it's all about my brand. It's all about my name, my image, my likeness. If that was the case, how much weight should that carry? Is the issue settled by counting noses? Now, last episode, I spoke about the fact that what has been the conversation now for several weeks, pitchers' injuries, Tommy John surgeries, and the like, from the major leagues all the way down, that has been the hot topic of conversation, and it has not lessened since last Monday's episode. Just a few days ago, I heard this.
Well, I just think you know, being around a lot of young college guys and high school guys, it's all about the velo. You know, it's all about how hard can I throw it? What can I do to throw it and get my spin rates up and all that? And that's kind of what most of the pitchers are kind of shooting for. I think when we were growing up, we were learning how to pitch. We were learning how to locate our fastball and change speeds. You know, we threw hard enough to have success. We weren't trying to force extra velocity. We were trying to force extra pitch selection and location and movement and game planning and all those things. So, you know, I think that's a big part of it. Also, I think, you know, the kids today, they play year-round. I mean, when we were growing up, played a lot of basketball, played a little bit of football, played all the sports, played baseball for 4 months a year. You know, I think the guys now are playing, you know, 10, 12 months a year, you know, with all the club ball going on and the travel and all that. So, you know, that's a lot of throws from the time you're 15 to 22, you know, when you've been playing year round like that. So there's only so many throws in your arm, and it doesn't seem like they take the time off that we took.
So that was Greg Maddux. He was a guest on The Book of Joe with Joe Maddon and Tom Verducci. That response was to Tom Verducci's question to him on what his views were on all of the injuries in Major League Baseball today. And that was the answer Greg Maddux gave. And if you listen to last week's episode, what he said sounded very similar to the things discussed last week. He also said, it was not in that clip, execution wins even in today's game. Now, Tom Verducci introduced Greg Maddux by saying this: there's nobody better to talk about this issue being the injury issue. My question is, did Tom Verducci make a true statement? Why or why not? Who says so? Well, sure, Greg Maddux played 23 years of Major League Baseball, pitched over 5,000 innings, won 355 games, started 740 of them, completed 109 of them, is in the Hall of Fame. But does that mean there's nobody better to talk to about the issue? Now add this in. Remember, 23 years, 5,000 innings, Greg Maddux in his entire career spent a total of 8 days on the DL. That's what it was called back then. And it was the first 8 days of one season because he had some kind of a back issue. That's it. 23 years, 5,000 innings. So when you add that into the equation, does all of this mean he must be correct? Who has that kind of resume that Greg Maddux has to speak to the issue? Now, is he just an old guy stuck in the past? Now, he said something in the clip that you heard. There are only so many throws in your arm. If I was interviewing him or if we were sitting in the same room, I'd ask him exactly what he meant by that. And he might respond in such a way that I would say, well, Greg, I disagree with you. So now the question is this. Does he win the argument about only so many throws in the arm because he's Greg Maddux and I'm Mark Dewey? He's a Hall of Famer and I was just a middle reliever for a few years in the big leagues? What if the overwhelming majority of amateur and professional baseball personnel, that could be front office, coaches, managers, players, whatever it might be, say that from this pitching standpoint, it is all about velocity and spin rates? Are they correct just based on the raw numbers of how many say that? Now, there was a person mentioned, he's been mentioned a few times actually by Joe Maddon, in the Book of Joe podcast or on it. And this man was at one time the pitching coach for Greg Maddux and had a lot of input and a lot of positive impact on Maddux's career. And as I talk about this man and some of the things that he has said, you'll see that what Maddux said, execution wins, even in today's game, is something that also this man would say today. And the man is Dick Pohl, who was a major league pitching coach for 25 years. And he was my pitching coach in 1995 and 1996 with the San Francisco Giants. And I stayed in contact with Dick on and off through the years. I haven't really so much since I've been out of the game professionally. But when I was coaching, a pitching coach, I think I did this when I was with the Brewers. I asked Dick if he'd be willing to, you know, we did it through email, or maybe I texted him and said, hey, if I email you some questions, are you willing to answer these questions for me? And he said, absolutely. And I was asking these questions for my sake to help me be a better pitching coach, but also to convey these things to my pitchers. So one of the questions that I asked Dick was, how much does fastball velocity matter, especially relative to movement and command? Now, I asked these questions, I'm almost certain, when I was in Brevard County, so 2012, 2013, so quite a long time ago, comparatively speaking. His answer was this: velocity may be the least important. Location and movement are the most important. Then he also wrote this in a response to one of the questions I had: great stuff in bad locations is bad. Then he wrote, pitchers with below average stuff who know they have to pitch are successful. Maddox, Moyer, Glavin all know location and execution are what it takes to be good. Now understand that when he says below average stuff, in one sense, I'd say Moyer probably fits into that category generally. Maddox and Glavin do not generally. They fit into that category as it regards velocity, as it regards even a nasty breaking ball. All three of those men did not have velocity. The movement Maddox had was unbelievable, and they all three had wonderful, outstanding, successful changeups. And then Dick Pohl also wrote this: there's a common practice among those who are successful. Watch the way pitchers through the years have done it well and replicate that. Locate, pitch inside, and change speeds. It's worked the same way for a lot of years. Again, Dick Pohl writing this about a decade ago, maybe a little bit more, looking back over many, many decades leading up to about a decade ago. Now, Dick Pohl knows what he's talking about. Or does he? How can anybody know anything with certainty? At the end of each of the Book of Joe podcasts, Tom Verducci always asks Joe Madden to close out the show. And typically, Joe Madden does so with some kind of quote, some kind of a couple sentences from a book, whatever it might be. Well, in the most recent podcast, the one in which Greg Maddux was a guest, this is how Joe Madden closed out that particular episode.
Creativity is bound up in our ability to find new ways around old problems. Creativity is bound up in our ability to find new ways around old problems. I think creativity should be bound up in our ability to find old ways around new problems. That's not what happens. We're always looking for new ways around problems where maybe tried and true is okay. Why do we, and again, that's where I have an issue with the term progressiveness. We could have like progress move in negative terms too. Then nobody, it's called regression. And so I took that today and I want to switch it around from new ways around old problems to old ways around new problems and see if we could find some substance in that. And again, it's about balance and morphing things together, however you want to describe it. But I thought that was really cool when I read that, and I thought it needed to be switched. I mean, you talk about Greg and pitching in general and what's going on. I think old ways could really help out with these new problems.
What do you think about that? Is creativity fundamentally finding new ways around old problems? Is it fundamentally finding old ways around new problems? Is it fundamentally a combination of the two? Did Joe Madden make an excellent point? If you don't think he did, why? Based on what? So we've heard from two Hall of Fame players, Robin Yount and Greg Maddux. We've heard from a man who potentially could be elected into the Hall of Fame as a manager, Joe Madden. And if you talk to all three of these men, I'm confident that there would be a fundamental agreement about the way the game ought to be played, about the way the direction the game ought to be moving, the way baseball players are developed well. I think these three men would be in fundamental agreement on all of that. And so, because it's two Hall of Famers and a potential Hall of Famer, because they said it, that settles it, right? Or wrong? Says who? Says you? Me? Them? The voice of the people? What if somebody sets before them and us their Ivy League diploma and says, "You guys are living in the past. Get with the program. Listen to me and all my buddies. Trust the experts." I hope that phrase has become one that you don't trust right from the get-go. But if that happens, then what? Does a plethora of Ivy League and Berkeley and Stanford and Rice graduates agreeing on these issues mean that you and I must embrace whatever they say? Kia, the Kia generation, K-I-A, was used by Kevin Kernan derogatorily. He used it as the know-it-all generation. But is it possible they do know it all? How do you determine? I have two stories. One is a man who had been in baseball for quite a long time interviewing for a job in baseball. Anybody who was interviewing him should have known definitively his track record and his background. And the very first question he was asked by a bunch of 20-something-year-old Ivy League grads, Berkeley grads, the like, the very first question for this job interview was, "Where did you go to college?" If you consider that question by a bunch of 20-something-year-olds from a man who had been in the game for a very, very long time, you recognize a serious problem. If you don't recognize that problem, I'm not sure if I can help you. Here's another story. I was talking, this was while I was still in baseball, I was talking with a man a little bit younger than me, but still generally my age, who's been in the game for a very long time, decades, multiple decades. And he said, "You know, Dew, they think it's guys like us that are closed-minded. The reality is, it's all these young guys, all these really smart guys that are closed-minded." And I said to him, "You know what? If anybody is observing with any eyes whatsoever, what you just said is irrefutable." Now, many people, and especially if you've heard me say this before, might attempt to settle this whole matter by saying, we've got to have the mindset of Dr. Charlie Green. And I've talked about Dr. Green before. His son, Charlie, and I worked together. And Dr. Green would come almost every year until he just got to where it was physically more difficult to both spring training and instructional league. And I would talk to Dr. Green all the time. Wonderful man, great baseball man, multiple decades, Hall of Fame college coach. And at this time, he was in his early 80s. And somebody said to him, "Dr. Green, are you old school or new school?" And he had the classic response, "I'm in school." And we might say, "That's it. That's the right answer." Well, I definitely like that answer. But how do we know whether what we are learning in school is worthwhile, beneficial, accurate, truthful? How do we measure whether anything being argued for or against has validity? What statements, what points of view can we confidently say you can take that to the bank? How do we know what ought or ought not be done? If we do not have a firm foundation, if there is no light shining in the darkness, if we lack an objective, unchanging standard of truth, we cannot know. Now, you may have determined or figured out early on the direction this was going. Maybe it took you a bit longer, but now you see. And you might say to me, "Okay, I get it, Dew. Yes, that's true. You're talking about Christ and his word. And if we're talking theology and doctrine, you're absolutely right. But come on, baseball?" Yes, baseball. If the question, by what standard, cannot be answered with confidence, then ultimately, whether a person is old or young, whether a person is a Hall of Famer from Major League Baseball or has a PhD from a prestigious academic institution, whether that person is you or me, whatever we claim, however passionate we may be with our claims, whoever and how many ever we have on our side, all of us and each of us are trying to make a point with both feet firmly planted on the clouds. But that's a conversation for another day. Join us next time for In the Bullpen on the Fight, Laugh, Feast Network. Thank you for listening.